Good afternoon. It's 4:31 right here on Katie and Kay Airwaves. Hope everyone's having a beautiful day. It's now time for Ask the Vet, and I hear today's theme is allergies and summertime parasite prevention. And here to tell us more are the vets themselves. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the Airwaves. I'll hand it off to you.
Perfect. Well, my name is Darren. I'm one of the nurses here at Alpine Animal Hospital. And here with me, I have Dr. Louise Marin.
Hello. Good to join you.
Exactly. So we're talking about one of the, I would say, most frustrating things that we see kind of around this time, and it's allergies. So Dr. Marin, I guess we should start with the basics of what do allergies look like in our little fur babies?
So most of the time, allergies manifest as itching. Occasionally, we'll see signs that are similar to people, like a little bit of watery eyes, sometimes red eyes, goopy eyes, sometimes like sneezing, sniffling kind of stuff. But the large majority of the time, it manifests as itching. Sometimes we can see allergies manifest in a little bit more subtle way. For example, a chronic ear infection. A dog or a cat that has an ear infection that just keeps coming back or won't ever go away. A lot of times that is caused by an underlying skin allergy.
Yeah, that's. I feel like that, you know, hits the hammer right on the nail of the things that we see. And I feel like when we talk about this in the rooms and, you know, we're talking about these ear infections, sometimes I hear doctors mention that the ear infections are mostly related to food allergies. Is that something that's correct? Or?
It does tend to be, and that's why I guess it's maybe a little bit sneakier, because it's difficult sometimes to understand that a dog would have a skin allergy if they're not itching all
right.
over. But it's true that sometimes it just manifests as, for example, an ear infection.
Right. Yeah, and that can be incredibly frustrating, you know, the client side, and especially for the patients. Like, it's got to be so irritating, poor things. So now kind of talking about diagnosing these allergies, we know that the kind of environmental portion is the itching. How would we diagnose, say, a food allergy?
So you make a good point. Allergies tend to be categorized into two groups. One is environmental, so grasses, pollens, trees, mold, things in the environment, dust mites, even human dander can be an allergen to some animals, believe it or not. The second category is food allergies, and food allergies tend to be caused by, typically it's a protein source. So there's a lot of kind of myths out there in terms of quality pet food and what ingredients should or should not be in it. And what it comes down to is that it really depends on the individual pet. And so grain-free or wheat-free or corn-free or any of those things, first of all, it tends to be the protein that is the allergen. And every different animal with allergies is going to be allergic to, you know, their own unique protein. So when we're trying to diagnose a food allergy, it can be tricky because you need to rule out environmental allergies, and then you need to find which specific ingredient in the diet is causing the problem. And commercial dog foods these days typically have a smorgasbord of ingredients. So they might have chicken and rice as the primary ingredients, but they also have whitefish, and they also have a little bit of egg, and they also have an on down the line. So it can definitely be tricky. So when we are trying to diagnose a food allergy, we put the animal on what's called a food trial or a diet trial. And that means we pick a food that has only two main ingredients, one protein source and one carbohydrate source. And that animal needs to be limited to those ingredients for a minimum of 8 weeks.
Excuse me, just a note from Kitty and Kay here. I think our connection is not quite as good today. And if you guys would just mind, wouldn't mind speaking up a little bit, that would be great. Thank you.
Sure thing. Sorry about that. Is this a little better?
That is better. Thank you so much.
Okay, perfect. So we were just kind of covering how to diagnose like a food allergy. And it really comes down to a feeding trial of 8 weeks with a specific diet that has it's limited ingredient to one protein source and one carbohydrate. So I feel like this is something that is it's very time consuming and it has to be super strict, no treats or anything like that. So I've heard a lot about blood testing. And I get some mixed reviews, Dr. Marin. It sounds like sometimes they're not super accurate and sometimes they're just allergic to everything. What are your thoughts on that?
So if you speak to a board-certified veterinary dermatologist, and these are the veterinary professionals that have dedicated their careers to animal skin, and a big part of that is allergy management, they typically will tell you that the blood tests for a food allergy are not reliable. That said, the test does exist, and the company that offers the test tends to be a pretty well-reputed company. So we do, on occasion, use the test just because, as you mentioned, it can be very difficult sometimes to ferret out exactly the problem. And so it's just a tool that, while it may be imperfect, it sometimes can be useful.
Right, for sure. It can give us a little bit of information, which is oftentimes super helpful, I think. One of the other things that I kind of, as far as like diagnosing a environmental allergy, is I think they're called the intradermal injections.
Yep, and so that has been, and I think remains still to this day the standard of care in terms of an accurate diagnosis of allergies. And so that test can only be performed by a board-certified dermatologist because it's very much, as much of a science, it's very much an art. And what it involves is taking tiny injections of a variety, sometimes up to 60 different things, and making a tiny little bleb under the skin with an injection. And then you watch the skin for a period of time for a reaction. And the places where something was injected that the dog has an allergic reaction to will develop a welt. And it's just a very finely nuanced test to perform because the tester has to use their experience with their eyes and their sense of feel to know whether a welt is there because they just made an injection or whether it's there because the animal is having a reaction. So pretty difficult. But that test does tend to be highly accurate. And what we take from that test is the items or the ingredients that were injected that do cause an allergic reaction can then be made into kind of like a vaccine. And that is then injected in very small amounts into the dog over a long period of time, once or twice a day. And the nice thing is that now they've come up with a technology that it doesn't necessarily have to be injected. It could actually be given orally. But it basically desensitizes. It's basically exposing their immune system to the thing that causes it to overreact. But you expose it in small enough doses for long enough that eventually the immune system becomes desensitized. And that, we call it hyposensitization. And that can be up to 75 to 80% effective. So in these dogs that just are miserable and itching all the time, or the medications that are available to help the itching are either too expensive or they cause adverse effects that are kind of intolerable, hyposensitization can be a really life-changing treatment.
I would definitely agree. I've seen that in action a couple of times in my experience as a veterinary nurse, and it seems to have really good, like you were saying, really good results. These poor, like, itchy, miserable dogs that are just scratching all the time after they've been on this for a while, they're a totally new dog, and it's just so amazing to see that. So, I think that's always one of those good feelings, for sure. Just as a reminder here at KD&K, this is a call-in show. The number to reach us here is 963-2976. So if you have any questions, please go ahead and give us a call. We would love to answer your questions about allergies or, you know, whatever we're looking for. Kind of back to that food allergies, do we sometimes see those present as gastrointestinal issues as well?
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes they do manifest as, like, upset stomach or chronic recurrent diarrhea or even vomiting.
Yeah, I was going to say that that was one of the things that we noticed, kind of along with the itching ear, or the, not the itching ears, but the ear infections that just keep coming back. So, now kind of talking about the treatments for those, I feel like one of the most common questions we get is there an over-the-counter medication that we can do?
For allergies and itching?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually quite a few of over-the-counter medications, starting with kind of the category that's outside of the medications, but can be really beneficial. We call them nutraceuticals. So omega-3 fatty acids it's a certain type of molecule that can incorporate into the cell wall that will reduce the risk or the affinity for inflammation. So giving fish oils to animals with mild allergies can sometimes be really helpful. Other over-the-counter items to consider would be like shampoos and moisturizing conditioners. So we usually would go to an oatmeal-based shampoo. Some dogs that have allergies, like environmental allergies, can be made more comfortable just by washing those allergies off the surface of their skin. So get a nice oatmeal-based soothing shampoo, and sometimes you can find also like a leave-in conditioner that'll help moisturize. And the frequency of bathing is not a hard and fast answer. It's kind of different for every animal. We usually say to bathe them as needed. So some people will say, you know, about 2 weeks after I give my dog a bath, he really starts itching again. Well, then we'd say probably your dog should have a bath about every 2 weeks. And then as far as other true medications that are available over-the-counter, antihistamines are kind of at the top of the list. Now, there's a long list of different types of antihistamines, and dogs don't tend to be particularly sensitive to them in terms of efficacy. I think it's reported that any given antihistamine may have about a 30% chance of having a benefit for any given dog. But that said, they tend to be pretty safe and they tend to be pretty available and economical, so we do often try them. Benadryl is the one that most people think about and know about. And dogs' dosing for Benadryl is much higher than humans. So a human might take a 25 milligram tab, maybe a 50 milligram extra strength tab if they're really suffering. But that same 50 milligram tab is what we would give a 50 pound dog, even though they weigh maybe a third as much as a human. So don't be alarmed if your veterinarian prescribes what seems like a pretty high dose of Benadryl. The downside with Benadryl is that it lasts only for about 8 hours. And so it has to be redosed relatively frequently. The other problem with it is that it causes drowsiness, can cause drowsiness. So a lot of times I like to use a different antihistamine that only has to be given once a day, like Claritin or Zyrtec. And also I find that either one of those tends to have less drowsiness side effects too. Can you think of any other over-the-counter?
Honestly, I think you hit the quote-unquote, the big three that I hear we talk about in rooms. I mean, I even had to take a Zyrtec today because those allergies are, wowza, hitting hard this year. Yeah, so that's, you know, I think that kind of covers it. I would just want to add a disclaimer of please check with your veterinarian before you, you know, start giving these medications. We want to just make sure that it's safe and the recommended one for sure. and kind of talking about the, we talked earlier about the feeding trials. I think, I feel like sometimes we do, you know, special prescription foods, which kind of act like that medication. You know, kind of thinking of Hill's ZD or, I can't remember what the Royal Canin one is called.
I think it's HA.
HA, right. Right. The hydrolyzed protein.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. I feel like those act like those medications and they help just, you know, take that itching away.
Just a reminder for the listeners, this is a call-in show. We would love to hear from you if you have any questions about allergies or anything else veterinary-related. The number to call is 963-2976.
Perfect. Now, kind of talking about that itching, we were discussing a little bit into the what we call the ectoparasites. It is that flea and, well, tick season mostly. I feel like we don't see a lot of fleas around in this area.
Yeah, we really don't. And the reason why these two topics kind of segue is that in areas of the country where there are a flea problem, they can be really aggravating to allergies in pets. So fortunately for us, we don't have dog and cat fleas in the sense like you might see in California or Florida or anywhere in the South where it's a warmer, more humid climate. We do occasionally see fleas on pets in this area, and those fleas would come from a wildlife source, rabbits or rodents. And so really when we use parasite control, external parasite control for our dogs and cats in this area in Colorado, it's for specifically for ticks, tick prevention, because those little buggers can carry some pretty nasty diseases.
I feel like we've seen quite a few already. Nasty, nasty little fellas. I feel like we've seen a couple in ears, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be pretty aggravating to an animal to get a tick embedded down in their ear canal.
For sure. Giving me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
So kind of speaking to those, there are a couple of different products out there. I've seen just the over-the-counter. You can get them at Walmart, Petco, I think, just over-the-counter stuff. And then you have the ones that are, you know, in clinics that require a prescription. I feel like we've seen a bit of a decline in the usage of the topicals. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, you're right. There are a wide variety of products available. So topical oil that you put on the animal's skin that then soaks into their bloodstream. So it doesn't, it's kind of a little bit confusing sometimes. People think that when you put a medication on topically, then it stays on the surface of the skin and that's how it has its activity. But the truth is that those actually get absorbed into the animal's bloodstream. So there are topical products that way that's an oil that you put on their skin that soaks in. There are oral medications, and there's kind of a variety of those anymore. The one that we carry is called Simparica, and it is a chewable flavored medication that the animal would take once a month. There's another medication called Bravecto that can have efficacy for up to 3 months, depending on the type of product. But as far as those topical products, the one that we carry, the benefit to it is that it also has kind of some bug repellent activity. So any of these other products, the tick would actually have to bite the animal and start to ingest the blood with the medication in it, which would cause the tick to reject the host or the victim and walk away. The Advantix product, topical product, actually helps prevent the tick from even wanting to take that first bite even to begin with. And there are some potential side effects of most of these products. And it can be kind of scary to read about those side effects because, you know, none of us wants our pet to have an adverse reaction. But as veterinarians and nurses, we recommend them because we feel that the benefit to be gained by preventing some of the diseases that these parasites carry outweighs the potential risk, And the potential risk in most cases is quite low on a population basis. Statistically, you know, only one or two dog out of thousands or tens of thousands is going to actually have a problem.
Exactly. Yeah, I would 100% agree with you there. I feel like the oral medications are a little more, you know, convenient too, especially in a yummy little treat where they'll just, you know, take it and eat it. I feel like some of the diseases that are transferred by ticks, those can be pretty gnarly for sure. Lyme's disease is probably the one that comes to mind. I don't think our ticks in this particular area carry that, do they?
You're right. They do not carry Lyme disease. So we're fortunate in that regard. There's only a specific type of tick that can carry that disease. And we don't have those ticks in our kind of climate zone. Just another reminder, this is a call-in show. We'd love to hear from you if you have any questions, veterinary related to the topic or otherwise. The number to call is 963-2976.
I really want to ask about some of the other diseases that the ticks in this area carry. Do they really carry diseases in this area?
They do. Fortunately, again, they're not highly prevalent, so not every tick bite is going to result in an infection. But the types of diseases that ticks in this area could transmit are things like Rocky Mountain spotted fever, or Ehrlichia, or anaplasmosis. And the problem with those diseases is that they can be kind of enigmatic in terms of the signs that they manifest are difficult to nail down. There can be kind of a wide variety of non-specific general, just the animal doesn't feel quite himself, him or herself. And because they lack the communication to tell us about kind of vague signs, oftentimes it requires a pretty extensive diagnostic workup to get down to the bottom of something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that they present so just generally ill. But then, you know, sometimes it can go a little unnoticed for sure. And I actually just had a thought about allergies, kind of going back to that. Do you see allergies very often in cats?
We do. They don't manifest it like dogs. Sometimes you'll see an itchy cat, but more often when a cat has an allergy, they're going to be kind of a chronic puker. Or they have asthma. Cats get asthma when they have allergies. Dogs do not manifest hypersensitivity to antigens in their airways. That's very much a cat thing.
For sure. I was just thinking about that because I feel like we recently saw a cat with asthma and just kind of made it pop in my brain.
And that's pretty much, we're almost out of time here. If you've got about another minute to wrap up, if you have any last thoughts on allergies.
I think that kind of covers everything I had today.
Yeah, the last thing I would say is that there are a variety of treatments that have become available just in recent years that can make a huge difference in the comfort and wellness of animals suffering from allergies. So really encourage you, if you have an animal that is showing signs of allergies, itching, if it's a dog, chronic ear infections, GI upset, or chronic respiratory issues if it's a cat, definitely we encourage you to seek veterinary advice because those animals can really be benefited by treatment for their quality of life. So it's been great talking with you today, Darren, and all you listeners out there, I hope we gave you some useful information. Yep. Have a happy Thursday.
Thanks so much, y'all. Talk to you next time.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.